left, starting with Senator Herr, Senate File 68. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have an author, A1.
Senator Herr has an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, to bring it in shape with the author's intent. Senator Herr moves the A1 amendment. On that amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Eastside St. Paul has been identified as a mosaic multicultural and more apparent melting pot community in Minnesota. Based on that notion, most people may think that the eastern part of St. Paul is overwhelmingly new Americans. While that may be true, the facet of our diversity include a widespread of senior citizens of various background, various ethnicity. Compared to other parts of St. Paul, Eastside has become an area with the largest number of senior citizens. As a grassroots senator, I see things from the ground up. I can attest to the hard work of the Northeast Neighborhood Block Nurse Program and the effectiveness of this organization in providing health care service to our diverse population seniors, mainly to help them live independently. Each of us as a state senator knows several entities in our own district that are most effective and can make a big difference in helping other people if they just get a little push. In my district, the Northeast Neighborhood Block Nurse Program is one of those entities. They will do the work regardless of our support, but they can go a long way if they just get that little push. My district has suffered much from all sorts of disparities. We have not recovered from decades of economic setback due to sequential closing of major companies like 3M, Whirlpool, Pam Breweries, causing thousands of job loss. However, optimism is coming back to the area. And if you come to my district today and visit, you will notice the many development in progress from rising restaurant to food co-op markets and to community clinic, condominiums, adaptable bus line, for future light rail, and all purpose to support the independent living of senior citizens and people with disability in my area. So I'm asking for your help to give the Northeast Neighborhood Block Nurse Program a little push for senior healthcare support that will sustain itself onward to accommodate senior in one of the most culturally diverse community. And I have with me here member of the Northeast Neighborhood Black Nurse Program to tell you more about the importance of their service, and I will answer to any question you may have. With me here is Marge Imbestein and Loretta Nowak. So, okay.
Welcome to the committee. Whoever wishes to start, state your name for the record.
Okay, I'll start. I'm Loretta Nowak, a board member and volunteer of the Northeast. This is St. Paul's Northeast Neighborhood Block Nurse Program, Living at Home Block Nurse Program. I'll refer to it as a Block Nurse Program so we don't have to go through the long name. I know you've all heard reports about how our population is aging. It's aging rapidly. And the same is true for Alzheimer's, which seems like it's becoming an epidemic. Well, on the northeast part of St. Paul, we did not have any community services to aid our elders. So in 2006, the Northeast Block Nurse Program got started. We started with 6 volunteers and $1,000 in a grant from the Wilder Foundation. At that point, we were the only community service center for elders in the Greater East Side. And I must say that the East Side has the largest contingent of 81 plus people still living in their own home. We're the boots on the ground. We're the people who see the elders in their own home. Give you an example. Last winter, we received a call about an elder who had been discharged from the hospital to her own home, and our part-time staff person, part-time because we can't afford a full-time, part-time staff person went to visit, found the elder wrapped in blankets trying to stay warm because there was no heat in the house and there was no food in the cupboard. Needless to say, I think we're also the safety net for our elders in our community. In summary, our goal is to help our seniors, our elders, our very diverse groups to live safely, independently in their own home for as long as possible. I know you've all seen the cost of nursing homes, of assisted care living, and it's so much cheaper when we can keep the senior in their own home. You know, we use community resources, we use local clinics, we use faith groups, business groups to help us in meeting our goal of meeting the needs of our elders. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Novak. You had one additional testifier, Senator Herr.
Yes,
welcome
Ms.
to the committee.
Marge,
state your name for the record.
Marge Ebensteiner, and I'm the chair of our Seniors for Better Living on the East Side. I don't know if I can top Loretta's story and how she communicated to you the needs that we have, but this is just to tell you, if those of you who are familiar with the east side of St. Paul, it's actually one-third of the population of the city. Approximately 100,000 people live in this segment. And we have very little. I talk with my hands. It's just a bad habit. And we have had very little infrastructure in place to serve the growing need of those getting older. So what we're trying to do, and this is just a step in our organization, is to set up an infrastructure for the future. But it's not just for us. It is for, there are four organizations in our, I call it my neighborhood, but in that part of the city that serve seniors. This amendment, as it is written now, would allow us to work in partnership and coordination with the other three. We would, we need to share staff, people, and just to talk a little bit about this is that our next effort is to set up what we call a memory clinic. And that would be for caregivers and those with memory loss. A place to come, share some time. We would set it up the same day we have our social hours, which is twice a month, and it's open to everybody. So from 10 to 1, then we serve lunch, would be four people with memory loss and their caregivers with games and activities and actually some sort of helps we're thinking about as to how to improve memory. Let's see, what else should I tell you? I've got all these notes and I haven't... Anyhow, you have a packet in front of you that we handed out. I don't know if you've all got it.
Yep, we got it.
But on the first page, there are some bullets, and it tells you about some of our activities. The 1,529 volunteer hours. Now, if you multiply that times four, if we're talking about the organizations in the neighborhood, but this was just our group. 682 hours of care coordination to 73 seniors, multiply that approximately by four. Somebody in here is an accountant. You can do that for me. But if you go down with the other bullets, you can see that we've been extremely active. The next page is talks about, and if you can, it's our board of directors. And for those of you familiar with St. Paul or the metropolitan area, you can see that we've got people from just about every neighborhood that's supportive of us because they've been affected by loved ones, husbands, wives, grandparents, friends, neighbors that have had memory loss or just social isolation or just suffered because they got old. And I can, believe me, look at me, I can empathize with that. I know what it's like to get old. I think that we really have to be concerned about this tsunami, if you will, although we don't have them here. I can't call it a tornado, but, you know, some sort of weather event that is really coming and is facing us. We've got to take a good look at this thing and say, how are we going to serve these people? And I'm just telling, I'm not telling you because that's a bad thing to do to a committee like this, but I think what I'm asking you is for your help so we can help others in continuing to do the work that we do.
Thank you, Ms. Ebenstein. Any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 2068? Seeing none, Senator Benson?
Mr. Chair, we adopted the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I just want to commend Senator Herr. He actually brought us a 990, which is commendable, particularly when asking for a specific organization, and now I'm going to make him regret it because it says the gross receipts, they file a 990N, which means their gross receipts are normally less than $50,000, and we're asking for $250,000 per year. And so I appreciate and understand the work and think, you know, things like this should be encouraged, but I think the ask is a bit out of line with what their current infrastructure might support. So, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
Could I respond?
Briefly, Ms. Novak, yes.
No, I just wanted to point out that the amount that we're asking is spread over four of these block home programs, not just the Northeast.
Okay. Ms. Ebensteiner.
Our budget for this year was $60,000, but when we did these form, it's an average of the, I think if somebody, again, can correct me if I'm not correct, but an average of the last 3 years. So that put us underneath that bottom line figure for having to file more paperwork.
Any further questions of members? Senator Herr, any thoughts?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The East Side St. Paul, like Ms. Ingerstein here, Steiner here said that it's, you know, population is a little over 100,000. It's about one third of the city of St. Paul. And actually, I represent the part of the East Side, but actually there's a total of five senators that represent the East Side. Senator Sandy Pappas and Senator Chuck Wieger, pushing a little forward to Senator Kent and Senator John Marty, actually total five state senators. So just the one that in the center of all. You know, so the progress is coming. The progress is coming. New development in the district. We had a senior citizen condominium coming in. And I would say where I live, my townhomes in itself, there's 29 units, and there are 20 members of those are retired school teacher, senior member already, and they are needing the support of the Black Nurse program so that they can continue on staying by themselves. And so, you know, I'm honored to carry this bill, and I would ask for your support. And this will create an infrastructure. They can continue serving now, but that infrastructure will continue to support the growing senior citizen that will be moving to my district. I bump into former Governor Wendell Anderson the other day before the state address, and he said, "Oh, I might come back to the to my hometown, my home former area." So I said, "You're welcome, come back anytime." So we already had a number of that. You know, our chief of police, former Chief Finney, are moving in my district, and Judge Cohen, who was the former mayor, Larry Cohen, who was former mayor of St. Paul, moved away to Maplewood and now coming back. They come back to retire in the area that they grew up, where things used to be happening. Yeah, and it will happen again.
Thank you. Senator Herr moved Senate File 643 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. Any further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Herr, and
thank
testifiers.
Thank you, members, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden.
I'll be right with you.
Copies. Oh, I'm sorry. The motion was to lay over Senate File 2068. I got a little ahead of myself. We now have Senate File 643 before us.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, I have Senate File 643, which fills the gaps in the Minnesota safety net for low-income Minnesotans who do not have access to affordable health care. Mr. Chair, I do have the A6 amendment that significantly refines the scope and cost of the original proposal.
Do we have a fiscal note drafted for that? I don't have it in my packet. Okay, we have the fiscal note drafted to this. Senator Hayden moves the A6 amendment, but it's not an author's amendment, so we'll have discussion on it before voting. Senator Hayden on the A6 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it just allows us to, as the fiscal note says, it really changed some of the scope of who we would cover on this. I can certainly have some of the folks that have been working on it, if we need more information on it, to talk about the comings and goings of the fiscal note and the amendment. I don't know if Mr. Godfrey would like to come up and talk about it a little bit.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is David Godfrey. I am representing Hennepin County Medical Center. And I can just quickly go through the A6 amendment. Section 1 provides for kidney transplants to individuals who are on the Emergency Medical Assistance Program. Section 2 provides a Medicaid-like coverage program for adults who... I'm sorry, yes. Section 2 provides for a Medicaid-like coverage program using state-funded dollars for individuals who are at end-stage renal failure. Section 3 provides for a coverage program for children under the age of 21 who are in the Emergency Medical Assistance Program. And then finally, Section 4 provides for a low-income, uninsured children's health program for people that are not eligible for Minnesota Care or Medicaid because of their immigration status. And that would be for children under the age of 15.
Okay. And we have the fiscal note drafted to this A6 amendment. Did you have additional testifiers, Senator Hayden?
I do. I've had two testifiers here that I will allow them to introduce themselves and give you some sense of what the need is in the communities that they serve.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Melissa Gatton. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Gatton. I'm the Executive Director of St. Mary's Health Clinics. With me is Ann Fox. Ann will follow my introduction, introduce herself, and provide a clinical perspective on the significance of this bill. In that vein, I will introduce Ann to provide insight into the needs of our patients and how this expansion would greatly benefit their continued health and well-being. Thank you. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Ms. Fox?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Fox, and I'm a registered nurse working with the St. Mary's Health Clinics in our diabetes program, which is funded through a Minnesota Department of Health Eliminating Health Disparities Initiative grant. In 2014, we provided 4,860 visits to low-income persons. This is a decrease of nearly 500 from the previous year because some of our patients fortunately became eligible for health care through the Affordable Care Act. Our diabetes program provided 1,400 visits in 2014. 90% of these were for patients who qualified for no health care program. For our diabetic patients, the treatment we provide includes the most basic, generic, oral medications, and when needed, insulin. For all of our patients, we provide medications, medical treatment, specialty referrals, support, and education at no cost to the patient. In addition to those visits, care is provided by a network of specialists in the community who assist us with either free or discounted visits. Our program is a primary health care clinic, staffed completely by volunteer physicians and nurses, but increasingly we receive requests for care from people with very complex medical problems. Consequently, our own already limited resources have become stretched beyond capacity. I'd like to tell you about some of the people who would benefit from expanded access to health care, although having heard the A6 amendment, I'm not sure the people that I am going to tell you about may be included in that group. But I'd like to tell you about them anyway, because they're the people that we see every day, day after day, and they're the people that you encounter in our community. Hector is the 37-year-old husband of Blanca, one of our diabetic patients. He had seen us for a routine physical exam and a minor procedure. He then developed an unexpected heart condition, and we had to explain to him that as a result, we would no longer be able to care for him. Hector is a roofer. Maybe you've seen him in your neighborhood. Without care, it's very likely that he will not be able to maintain the job that supports his family of three children, one of whom has a disability. Miguel is also one of our diabetic patients. Last week, we had to tell him that although we could continue to care for his diabetes, we could not perform the testing needed to determine the cause of his leg pain. Pain so severe that it keeps him from doing the physical activity to improve his diabetes or even to allow him to work in the restaurant where he works to support his family. Other patients include Maria, who has severe rheumatoid arthritis. Without medication, she's unable to do even simple household tasks. There's Saul, who has diabetes complicated by retinal damage and risks losing his sight without treatment. And Marta, whose diabetes complications require that she wear special shoes to enable to work in the fast food restaurant that you've maybe visited. These are only a few examples of people who contribute to our community, not only with their work, cleaning the houses and offices and hotels, washing dishes in the restaurants, packing boxes in the factories, picking the onions and packing the peas, but also with their culture, their creativity, and their generosity of spirit. We will continue to do what we can to provide their care. We ask that you consider extending the generosity of Minnesota to them with an expansion of the coverage that this bill would provide. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 643? Seeing none, Senator Hayden moves Senate File 643 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill as amended. On that motion, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Hayden and testifiers. Senator Hayden, you have Senate File 1493 as well.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good afternoon again. I have Senate File 1493 that deals with the TEFRA program and the parental fees. Mr. Chair, children with disabilities are eligible, just for the committee's background, for medical assistance based on their disability. If their parents' income would normally be too high to qualify for medical assistance, they can receive coverage for in-home supports and medical services through the TEFRA program. Families accessing these programs pay fees on a sliding scale. For some middle-class families, these fees can be several hundred dollars or more a month. These fees have been increased. These fees have been an increased burden on Minnesota families, and for some families have made medical assistance coverage unaffordable. In trying to create an opportunity to help these families and those families not accessing medical assistance whose children could benefit from it, we will continue to work on the language of this bill and to create options to try to lower the cost while still benefiting the families. Today, Mr. Chair and members, I have Steve Larson with the ARC Minnesota and Kelly Casso, who's a parent of one of these children.
Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson with the ARC Minnesota And, Mr. Chair, your hair looks very nice today, and I sure wish we were meeting on Saturday.
How many did he get with that?
Thank you.
I could say some more, but I won't.
Mr. Larson, I do my best.
Mr. Chair, to connect the dots between various bills that have been heard today, Senator Hoffman hosted the Werkler family. And I talked to the Werkler family as they left today, and it turns out, not surprisingly, they pay parental fees. And their parental fee used to be $600, but now it's down to $400. A couple of the reasons that fee went down were 2 years ago in 2013, in order to get our parental fee program consistent with medical assistance access and eligibility with the ACA, we were able to eliminate parental fees for families with 275% or below the federal poverty level fees for them, and also lower them in 2013 slightly for the rest of the families. Last year during conference committee, we were able to lower across the board fees by 10%. And so that's partial reason why the Werkler family is only paying $400. The other reason is they've had to cut back their hours in order to provide the care for Claire. They said that they had up to 120 appointments per year that they took Claire to medical appointments. And so they're maybe untypical as far as the medical care that needed to provide Claire, but they're typical as far as families that are middle class, lower middle class, are in that range that are continuing to pay parental fees. So why do families access medical assistance through the TEFRA program? It's because their current health care coverage does not provide for the services and supports and therapies that only medical assistance will pay for in Minnesota. Last year, we made some progress in requiring some of the larger programs or larger businesses to pay for some of the therapies that traditionally had only been eligible or paid for through medical assistance or MCHIP, but most families are not impacted by that. Families access the services so that they can get their therapies, so that they can get their PCA services, so that they can get medical services that traditional medical plans don't pay for. And we hope that we continue to make progress in making some of these services more available through our traditional plans. But currently, that's not the case. In 2014, MCHA ended, and a lot of families that had been on that are now on the TEFRA program and are paying fees. And we have a number of families who would love to testify today, but they aren't in the red shirts, who are representing all of the families that pay parental fees. The state, in their fiscal note, and we'll probably review that briefly here, does not count the savings that can occur. And so a couple of examples of that is through the use of PCA and respite services, we are keeping families together so that their child is not moving out in out-of-home placement, which is much more expensive. On the therapy side, we have a variety of autism therapies that are helping some children with autism to be able to participate more fully and not eventually need that therapy or medical assistance. And so that's why this program is so important, and families are willing to make significant sacrifices in order to pay for those parental fees. And I'm going to end my first part of my testimony there and then come back and discuss the fiscal note after Ms. Kozel shares her story.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Kelly Kozel. My name is Kelly Kozel. My husband and I live with our six-year-old son, Noah, in Apple Valley, Minnesota. Noah has autism followed by an expressive speech delay. We have done everything humanly possible to help him develop skills to engage his family, school, and community. With the help of therapies and supports, he's at a great local kindergarten with the help of a one-on-one aide. Noah, just being at school this year, it's a success story in its own. There's no words to describe how far he's come with his medically necessary therapies. We are lucky that we've been able to access these medically necessary therapies and services that many families cannot. Insurance companies such as ours don't pay for autism therapies, and we've had to apply for medical assistance MA-TEFRA. We've been on TEFRA for 4 years. Our annual monthly fee is $900. On paper, we may look like a middle-class family who can afford to pay this, but in practice, this fee is a huge burden on our family and many families with children with special needs. My husband has a good job, gets raises, but everything he does, the TEFRA fee goes up, and we can't get ahead. Last year, we had debt collectors calling from the county stating to put the fee on credit cards, so I did. I put $900 on a credit card at a 12% interest rate, revolving. We've already cut back. We've moved houses twice to downsize to try to budget for the fee. Noah had a hard time moving between the houses because it's just really hard to move a child with a disability. Last August, I cashed out my 401k to pay the parental fee so my son could have access to the therapies and services that are medically necessary for him because he has autism. I worry about whether we'll be able to continue to pay this fee and how it impacts our family both financially and emotionally. I know that many other families are in the same situation. Many families are forced to forego therapies and treatments because they simply can't afford it. Many families that I know have walked away from their homes. If the kids don't get the early intervention that they need, then the schools are left to help them, and they're not equipped. Let's have an elimination or please significantly meaningful reduction this year so families can afford these very important services. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that Mr. Larson was going to walk us a little bit through the fiscal note just briefly, and I just think that Madam Chair, members, with Ms. Causal's testimony, I think it is a lot of families throughout the state that are having the same issues, and I think that we should think deeply about how we can come up with a solution. I don't think that those should have to go into debt to be able to take care of their children.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hayden, do you have further testimony?
Madam Chair, Steve Larson again with the ARCS, Minnesota. I just wanted to touch bases on a few points in the fiscal note, which is quite long. And I'm glad we had this fiscal note done, proposing to eliminate parental fees, realizing that that's not going to be possible in our current budget situation. But it does provide us with a baseline of the numbers of people on parental fees and the number that could be on parental fees, which is one of the areas we have not talked about. And that is that there are a number of families that need the services that medical assistance would provide their family, but simply can't pay the parental fees and don't access those services. So we as a society are paying a price when children don't get the therapies, don't get the personal care assistance that they need, and the families don't get that type of help. And the fiscal note demonstrates that if we eliminated parental fees, that there would be up to 450 new families that would access that service. And a good part of the fiscal note is the extra cost of those medical assistance services, and there's also the cost of eliminating the fees. Realizing that we're not going to be able to fully endorse a $18 million fiscal note, which was quite a bit higher than we expected, we have already provided some of the committee members' staff with the language that passed last year that provided a structure last year for cutting those fees by 10%. And we just would like to ask the committee as we go through this process hopefully to lay this bill over for consideration, but we will continue to work on a bill that would lower these parental fees.
Any further questions from members? Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move Senate File 1493 for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Finance Bill.
Before I move the motion, is there anyone in the audience or a member of the public that wants to testify in opposition or support at this time? Seeing none on Senator Hayden's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Motion is adopted. The bill is laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Members, we are awaiting for one fiscal note, no, for one for Senator Cohen to come up from finance. Excuse me. So we might have to be on recess until further notice. So We'll take a few minutes to recess, but stick around until further notice. With that, we stand in recess.
How long are you talking about?
Senator Sharon, probably any moment, 5-10 minutes, possibly maybe a little more. All right, with that, we are recessed.
Together for a third session on April 17th. We have a chair and an author for our last bill. Senate File 2035. Senator Pappas, thank you for sitting in for Senator Cohen, who's chairing in another room. Welcome to the committee. Tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll turn it over to the testifiers here who are going to, in the interest of time, who are going to explain what their request is.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, whichever of you wishes to start.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Otis Zanders, Zanders, and I serve as the CEO and president of Ujamaa Place. Ujamaa Place is an organization in St. Paul that will be recipient of this bill, of this funding bill, to provide supportive housing for the young men in that program. It's a pleasure to have a few moments to introduce you to Ujamaa and as well expound on our housing component of our program. Again, Ujamaa Place is located in St. Paul, and we focus on services for young African-American men, primarily between the ages of 18 and 30, who are experiencing multiple barriers to becoming stable, productive members of their communities. These barriers include being uneducated, unemployed, homeless, affiliated with gangs, or having a criminal history, having mental health as well as substance abuse issues. A lot of men in that program also experiencing the life of growing up without a father figure or a positive role model in their life. The purpose of our program is to provide a holistic program to address these issues for restoration. We're about restoring young men, a program that has a broad agenda, that we have a holistic model that provides itself providing training and preparation for men to have stable housing, increase their education attainment, secure and retain a job, connecting with their families and children, and our biggest ROI, return on investment, is eliminating contact with the penal system. Our position has been that in the work that we do, providing these elements that lead to stable housing is a tremendous impact onto our community and the welfare of our tax base. To have a young man complete 1 year of services at Ujamaa, it costs about $3,500. If one of these young men enter our criminal justice system, depending on their placement, would be $60,000 to $80,000 a year. So we've shown to be a very effective program that's entrenched in best practices and have a valid instrument to evaluate our services through Wilder Research. The issue that we have, we bring to you, Ujamaa Place, is that our holistic approach is that housing is one of the components. We feel that through housing, to get there, to make sure we wrap around services, making sure they have adequate education so they can get into jobs that go beyond the entry-level employment status. The education is the primary goal of that, as well as sustaining employment and getting themselves in a position where they can take care of families. Housing become a very key ingredient. Our bill is asking for housing to do supportive housing. We are not a housing agency, but every man in that program, 100% of our men come to us either homeless or in an unstable housing environmental situation. What we have been able to do with collaboration with our partners as well as landlords that we're working with is being able to get men out of homeless environments. Currently, right now, through our partnership with PPL, Beacon Interfaith, and other private landowners, we're able to have people in housing that we've seen what stabilization would do. With this housing bill, it helped us with the rental assistance. It helped also with a lot of incidents like rental application, also with the further training that do to secure housing. All of the supportive classrooms, as well as the incidental things like paying rent, moving expenses, just the employment prep and training they need to get young men into secure housing. We've been very effective with this model, and we're pleased that to be here to come to you at a program now that's entrenched with data to show you that it's very effective, a cost-effective measure to serve the state of Minnesota. With your permission, I'd like to introduce Kedar Hickman, Mr. Hickman is our program manager, and he will just add a little volume onto the housing that we currently have in place.
Thank you, Mr. Zanders. Mr. Hickman, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for having us this morning. My name is Kedar Hickman. I am the program manager of Ujamaa Place here in St. Paul, as Mr. Zanders has stated. And I would just like to share with you how our levels of housing work within Ujamaa Place as an organization. As Mr. Zanders said, is we are not a housing organization, but we have housing elements as a part of a part of our programming. We have three structural components or layers of housing with Ujamaa Place. That first being short-term and immediate housing, which we are in partnership with Union Gospel Mission here in St. Paul. What this level allows us to do is for men who are immediately homeless or who have chronic bed hopping, so to speak, or couch hopping, so to speak, and a level of instability, is it allows us an opportunity for anywhere from a couple of days to several weeks to be able to find some stability for these young men while we look for other housing, stable housing measures for them. Many of these men are seeking out higher education, whether that be post-secondary. Some of them, for them, it is a their first level of a GED or now an adult diploma, and it's very hard for them to focus on that education when they have no idea where they are going to rest their head. So for us, that immediate and short range housing is the first step towards them being able to be more successful in that respect. Our second level of housing is we have a partner, Beacon Interfaith Housing, and what our partnership says is there's a building on Charles and Snelling here in St. Paul. It is called Kimball Court, and it is single room occupancy. And what this allows us to do is basically it's a room, so it's dormitory style housing. Where our men are able to secure a room, and then there is a shared kitchen space, shared living spaces around computer lab, just common areas and those kinds of things. And what we do when a young man is eligible for this single room occupancy is we pay for the first 3 months of their stay within Kimball Court there, because it is about, for many of them, the first time that they actually put their name on a lease. Many of them, their credit needs to be established. This helps us to help them establish their credit, their rental history, and also stable housing. So we pay for the first 3 months. Fourth month, we pay 75%. Fifth month, we pay 50%. And then our Ujamaa man takes on the lease ongoing from there. We want to have our men working at that time when they go in, although it's not necessary. When those men that we have who are not working going in, is they are part of our job placement and development programming within the organization to make sure that they are working, because 5 months does go by very quickly and they are responsible for those rents. We also, which takes us to our third layer, which is what we call our signature housing, a partnership with Project for Pride and Living and the St. Paul Housing, St. Paul PHA, which we have in partnership a building at 716 Selby here in St. Paul, which is supportive in transitional housing. Ujamaa men who become eligible for this housing are able to secure a lease, a 12-month lease, at which upon completion, as they become eligible for a Section 8 voucher, a portable Section 8 voucher. A part of our housing services in helping our men to be successful in turning these houses into a home, and what stability really means is it does mean a home. You know, it's not just this space to live in. We offer for those men who have children, we buy the bedding for them. We do referrals for them for Bridging, which is an organization, a nonprofit organization that offers furnishings for people going into housing. We offer the application fees and those kinds of things. So there are a lot of fees that we pay to help support strong success for our men who are going into our housing. And then one other layer of housing that we do have that is not a part of our traditional housing is we have a partnership with mental health resources here in St. Paul, and also in partnership with the Department of Corrections that that is an initiative, a Housing First initiative, that helps young men who are coming out of incarceration find housing to jumpstart some stability and some success in their moving forward and not returning to incarceration. So with that, I would I humbly give up the mic. And if there are any questions.
Any questions from members? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 2035? Seeing none, Senator Franzen moves Senate File 2035 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. On that motion, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pappas, and testifiers.
Thank you. Thanks, you.
And with that, we stand adjourned. That's the end of hearing bills other than the omnibus finance bill.
Wow.
We'll get back together next week.
That's good.
We stand adjourned. Thank you, members.